Welcome back to another episode of Eye on Digital Marketing. Don't forget, you can follow More Visibility on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And Charlie, did you know that you could tell Alexa to open Eye on Digital Marketing podcast?
I did know that, but I don't know if our listeners did. So you should certainly try it out on your own Alexa device.
That's right. If you got Alexa at home, just simply say, Alexa, open Eye on Digital Marketing, and you will start to hear our voice. Charlie, welcome back to the podcast. For everyone who's listening, we tried to record this episode last time. We had a little bit of a technical difficulty, so I appreciate you joining us here for round two.
Yep, it's great to be back.
I wanted to do this because today the topic is responsive ads. We're going to break down responsive search ads, display ads, social ads. So this was an important topic that I wanted to make sure that the listeners got a chance to hear, and it kind of piggybacks off episode 22. By the way, Charlie, I don't know if you're a basketball fan. Are you a basketball fan?
I am, Chuck.
This is episode 23, so you are the Michael Jordan of the Eye on Digital Marketing podcast. I don't know if that makes you feel any type of way, but I wanted to let you know.
Okay, well, this is going to be the GOAT of all episodes.
There you go. So, Charlie, let's get right into it then. Responsive ads in general, right? Yep. Before we get to search, What does that word responsive mean?
Sure. So, essentially, the way it's really being leveraged by most of the main platforms now, namely being Google, Facebook, LinkedIn a little bit, but for Google for search and display, and then Facebook for everything they do on the social platform, what's responsive is the actual ads themselves are dynamically changing and ad variants are being tested on the fly with each ad impression. So rather than having just a static ad variation, testing maybe, you know, 3 to 4 of those per campaign, ad set, ad group, what have you, you have one bank of assets. Depending on the platform, it'll be, you know, different types of assets. Maybe it's, you know, video, image, headlines, descriptions, anything of that nature, and it'll responsively test all of those assets on the fly.
So what's the benefit of using responsive search ads versus kind of the traditional way that people used to go about it when there wasn't this bank of assets to choose from?
Sure. So it's really leveraging the power of each of the platforms. So whether it's Facebook or Google or any other platform, they have so much data on users. They know what works best. They know each user's browsing habits. Do they click more on videos? Do they click more on images? What types of ad copy resonates with them? So they're taking that information and then information that's happening on the fly within campaigns and optimizing for each ad impression. So if I were to launch, you know, let's say 4 years ago, or actually, you know, much sooner than that, or like a year ago before these were really, you know, bigger in each of the platforms, I have 4 static ad variations. Okay, we're going to launch with all of these ad variations, see of the 4 which one has the highest click-through rate. You know, maybe we'll pause one or two of them as the campaign goes on. Now, with these responsive ad units, you have kind of all your assets at once. You can test tons of headlines and descriptions and media assets. And rather than having to make a decision later on after the fact, the engine is doing that for you. And you can get creative insights still for future campaigns, but the actual optimizing itself is happening on the fly for each user, and it's specific to each user. So really for advertisers, it's a no-brainer to adopt this as soon as possible.
Yeah, it sounds like it's just a lot more efficient, right? Mm-hmm. More efficient with your budget. You are able to make decisions quicker. So if you're not using responsive ads in general, you're probably losing out in that efficient category in some type of way. Mm-hmm. And we all know advertisers want to save time and money. So let's start to break that down then, because there's lots of types of ad units. Mm-hmm. Let's start with responsive search ads. You're a campaign manager, manage campaigns on a daily basis, and I'm sure you have lots of clients currently utilizing responsive search ads in Google, for example. What are some tips that you can give us about responsive search ads and maybe even how that user experience goes from that click?
Yeah, absolutely. So just as a quick refresher for anyone out there that maybe not be as, that isn't as familiar with responsive search ads. So it's really the latest one in terms of the main platforms, in terms of the latest responsive ad unit to be available to advertisers. So dynamic creative in Facebook, I think, came out first, then responsive display ads for the Google Display Network. So responsive search ads were kind of a no-brainer for Google to have that implemented for some of their largest properties there. So what you're doing is, instead of having, you know, those static ad variations like we talked about, that, you know, expanded text ads utilize, you put a bank of headlines. You can have up to 15. A bank of descriptions. You can have up to 4. You can also have path fields. You set the final URL. And once you have that in place for the search ads, you do this at the ad group level. So, you know, you could, you know, duplicate, you know, the same responsive search ad, you know, across different campaigns or ad groups. Right. But this is all at the ad group level. You would need to have one per ad group.
Okay.
Which is, you know, aligns with a lot of keyword themes and ad themes with, you know, older strategies using static ad variations.
Sure.
So once you have those assets in place and you launch the campaign, then you'll, you know, be dynamically testing variations, you know, as many as there could be between all those headlines and descriptions within the search ads. And you can start to get some interesting reporting. You can see how many impressions were attributed to a specific headline, specific description. Of course, you can look at the unit at large and see what the click-through rate is. And when launching these at this time, because responsive search ads are still technically in beta, you know, we have seen success with it, you know, across the board when implemented, but we do recommend still keeping expanded text ads for the time being on, when initially launching the campaigns, just at this time. But I do foresee that Google's definitely going to make this, you know, the main ad unit of choice, the optimal best practice, search ad unit, much like they did with responsive display ads, which is now the standard display ad unit.
Right. 15 headlines and 4 descriptions, you said. If I wanted to, well, I guess, first of all, maybe a question that I see all the time as a strategist working with clients is sometimes they'll rebuttal with, you know, is that enough? Should I test more? Given what you know, how smart Google's AI is, of course, some clients may have more descriptions that they want to test. Headlines, that's a lot of headlines, 15. Yeah, if you have more than that, that you may need to trim that down. But I could see someone saying, hey, I got a couple more descriptions that I want to test. Would you recommend, like you said, maybe doing another ad group and throwing those in there? Or do you think starting out with just, you know, 15 headlines and 4 descriptions, as Google recommends, is probably the best way to go?
Yeah, definitely the latter there. I wouldn't recommend duplicating an ad group just to get a, you know, another responsive search ad unit. You know, you could have 2 responsive search ad units in an ad group as well if you really had that many descriptions and headlines. But like you said, 15 headlines is more than enough. 4 descriptions is also ample space, I think, to get any of those main, you know, copy points that you would have for an ad group out there to the users. And once you have enough data collected, you can start to integrate some new ones, maybe replace some description lines, add in some new headlines. What's really cool about having this feature, especially with the headline aspect, you know, of course you can do this with the 4 descriptions as well.
Yeah.
You can take your top performing ad variations from expanded text ads of the past or that are even still running, incorporate those, what you feel are your best, you know, headlines, descriptions, you know, what resonates most as a brand as well. If you want to, of course, have your brand name, any strong call to actions, and then maybe test some newer things that you normally wouldn't, you know, give placement to in some of those static ad units. And you can see very quickly once you have some spend attributed to the campaign, what's performing well.
Sure. So let's switch gears a little bit too to talk about Google responsive display ads as well. So kind of switching from headlines and descriptions to more so a visual ad unit where you're going to have to pull in, you know, images and different assets like that. What are your tips there? What does Google recommend there? Does that strategy drastically change from the search strategy?
So in terms of how to approach implementing and creating this ad unit, it doesn't change much from responsive search ads. Display ads did come out first, the responsive display ads. So the search ads kind of model that in terms of taking, you know, those asset banks, the way it works, and then putting it into a search ad format.
Yeah.
So the responsive display ads, like I mentioned earlier, they are the new standard now. Traditional static banners don't perform as well. We've seen that internally here in terms of click-through rate. You know, the responsive display ads certainly outperform. But the way it works is very similar. You can upload, you know, a certain amount of, you know, images, videos. And with the videos, it's very easy for advertisers. You can actually just link to a YouTube video, whether it's listed or unlisted, if you want to make it private.
Yeah.
And then it just goes right into the responsive display ad unit.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. And you can also do up to 5 headlines, up to 5 descriptions. And then you have 1 long headline as well. So these copy points get integrated with the images, the videos that you have added to the asset bank of the responsive display ad unit.
Sure.
And this really eliminates the need to have any copy points in your imagery. And you actually shouldn't upload images for this that have, you know, very strong copy or text that's really taking over the image. It needs to be more visual in nature, much like Facebook now
works. So they still have that 20% rule?
Facebook has that rule still. I'm not sure if there's something similar for Google. I do know they do get disapproved sometimes if it is you know, violating the policies there for the images. But you really shouldn't have any strong, you know, wording or just any taking up a lot of space there within the images, because you're going to have the long headline, the descriptions, and have those. So that'll do all the speaking in terms of copy.
You mentioned video too. I find that fascinating because, you know, everyone knows the popularity rise and the success that video ads have had if you do it right. But we're talking about Google responsive display ads, likely someone having a very, very short time to engage with your ad before they click or make a decision to move on. So what, in your experience, have you seen the type of videos that you should be pulling in? Obviously, we're probably talking about a short length, but any other tips? Because you have to kind of capture them quickly, right?
Yeah, so it's very interesting with the responsive display ads, because within the display network now, when you launch a campaign, by default, you're showing up, of course, website placements that you see traditionally when you're on a website, whether it's desktop or mobile, you know, banners across the site. But it also incorporates Gmail, YouTube, and app traffic as well. So even if you just have a display ad unit and you didn't specifically make a YouTube campaign or a Gmail campaign, the display ads can still show up in those platforms. So when thinking about these ads, though, which, you know, while they are responsive, they're still static placements. It's just the assets are responsive within it. So with videos, it's a little interesting, because I would say that, you know, something like a bumper ad, if you're running just a pure YouTube video, which is up to 6 seconds, that would likely be the best fit for a responsive display ad here. However, you still can have longer videos that are incorporated there. Much like responsive search ads and dynamic creative when we get to Facebook, it's still incorporating all of the machine learning that's in place from the platforms.
Yeah.
So one of the other things that's really cool and responsive in nature when we're talking about the responsive display ads is not only the creative and the ad variation testing, but it's also responsive to the placements that it's placed on. So if a website, you know, has a very, you know, specific ad size placement that it can have, it's going to take the assets that you have, shape what it feels will be the best looking ad that'll integrate well with that particular website placement or app placement, wherever it's showing, and also geared to the user as well. Maybe some copy points it feels that the user would be more compelled to click on, or maybe it knows that that user looks at a lot of videos. Maybe bumper ads resonate well with them, or YouTube videos in general, and they'll show the videos more often than not. So all of that stuff wasn't really possible to optimize towards before responsive ad units, and now with the responsive display ads, all that can be taken into consideration with any ad impression.
That's going to give you a lot more reach, right? With Google having the ability to take your ad unit and just shape it to what that website needs, where before, if you didn't create that exact size and it didn't fit what that website was hosting, your ad's not going to show up there, right? So it's increasing your reach a lot too. You also mentioned that, you know, I believe Google responsive display, as you said, automatically opts into other placements like Gmail. This is quite common, where a lot of times, we hear this with Facebook a lot, advertisers will set up an ad campaign, not understanding that that campaign also has pre-selected options to, let's say, run on Instagram or run in other places. And then when they check their results, they're so surprised because they thought they only set up a Facebook campaign, but it's much more than that. So Google has, you know, their feelers out across multiple platforms. You mentioned Gmail, which I think is pretty interesting, because if you have a Gmail, like a lot of people do, they split it up by those tabs, right? Promotions, your regular mail. So are you going to see this ad in that promotions category, or how would that come through? Same thing?
Just like any other Gmail ad, you would see a responsive display ad show up in that promotions tab on the top there, where you get those sponsored emails.
Got it.
And on the YouTube side, and another, you know, of course, popular placement that a lot of people might not realize with responsive display ads, it would show up more of a static banner, which we often see on YouTube. It wouldn't be like a pre pre-roll video or a bumper ad necessarily, because it's still incorporating all that text.
Right.
Yep.
Is there any time where your strategy would call for you to not select those placements? Like, you know, Gmail, I've heard from a lot of people, I don't receive as much engagement on my ads as I would YouTube or my regular display placements. Yeah. Is that true across the board, or would you say you have to kind of tailor that based on, you know, what you're advertising?
Yeah, so it definitely depends on a lot of things. I think by default, the best approach would be, you know, of course, it depends on your targeting. If you have like a remarketing audience that you know is very qualified in terms of, you know, being someone you want to reach and that can convert,
yeah,
you want to reach them wherever they are,
right?
You know, regardless of the placement. But what's really great, you know, with a lot of types of reporting within Google, and specifically for responsive display ads, is you can see where ads were shown and then see performance based on whether it's the website URL, the actual app it was shown. I think YouTube as well, you can see like either the channel or the video that was shown. I think it's the channel. And then, of course, you can see Gmail as well. So yeah. Once you start to get more results, you can start to optimize based on placements, based on the type of placements or the network, and then make your decisions that way. Of course, there's a lot of other elements in terms of the audience targeting.
Right.
But I wouldn't say by default you should just exclude maybe Gmail if it didn't work in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You should really let the audience targeting do the work and finding the audience that you're dictating wherever they may be.
That makes sense. And when you're running on a cost per click basis, I would assume that click you're paying for is when you click to open that Gmail ad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the user doesn't have to open it and then click something else in it. If they open it, then you're paying for that click.
Yeah, for the Gmail, that is correct.
Got it.
And you can report on Gmail opens as well within the campaigns. So before that would be exclusive to a Gmail campaign, but now if responsive display ads, any display network campaign that has that ad unit, you can start to see that as well.
So if you're separating out quote unquote conversions for these type of ads, that's very important to know.
Yeah.
Charlie, let's shift lastly to our last main topic for responsive ads, which is social.
Yes.
And particularly Facebook, right? Mm-hmm. You mentioned that Facebook was the first platform to start this kind of responsive bank where you upload a lot of assets and let its AI do the work for you. Describe that experience on Facebook and some tips for running responsive ads on that platform.
Yeah, Facebook really kind of set the standard with this type of ad unit. You very much like the responsive display ad units. You can go in at the ad set level, so just like Google has it at the ad group level, and you can make one dynamic creative ad unit. You can upload images and videos. You can upload them together. In the past, they actually had to be separate. If you had, you know, videos, you'd have to do a separate dynamic creative ad. That's no longer the case. You can integrate those together. And it also works with Instagram as well and more types of Facebook and Instagram campaigns than it did in the past.
Yeah.
They're opening it up more and more. It's definitely become optimal to utilize this depending on the amount of creative you have, which is more important than Facebook and than most engines, being that, you know, it's a social network, it's very creative driven, you're telling a story.
Yeah.
So if you have, you know, more than, you know, one or two images, if you have video content, you know, more than one or just one video and maybe three images, for example, you certainly would want to do dynamic creative. Even if you want to use the same you know, ad text, the same headline, the same news link description, just having those assets alone and giving Facebook and Instagram the opportunity to optimize between it, that more than calls for it. And this is something that's, you know, well out of beta, definitely you know, the standard now when you're utilizing this. But it would just be creative assets as a roadblock in terms of not recommending this. If you wanted to just make a static post, maybe you have one or two images, there's no need for dynamic creative. You really have to have enough assets to call for it.
So if I am ready to go to market with my ads and I want to target a particular audience, I know that I have, let's say, these three buckets that we talked about, Google search, display, and Facebook, particularly talking about display and Facebook because those are more visual and I have a lot of assets. How's that targeting differentiate between Facebook and Google Display? Because Google Display, right, you upload these responsive ads and you're trying to pinpoint where your audience is based on a network of websites, where Facebook is much more direct on who you can go after. Does that make a difference if you're on a budget and you're trying to target a different audience? Have you seen certain, you know, success stories come from one platform or another? Because that's a common question. Like, where do I start based on who I need to go after?
Sure. So there's a lot of ways to approach that question. I would say Google Display, just first and foremost, you know, has started to integrate a lot of new options that are a lot more granular and specific to users. Custom intent audiences, for example, where they're finding users that have shown intent in whatever you're indicating to the platform very recently within, you know, the past few days, for example.
Right.
So it's Google Display has become a lot more sophisticated in prospecting, where Facebook still is as well, but there's a lot of advancements there.
Yeah.
Remarketing for both platforms, I think, is a great place to start. You know these users already, whether you have their emails, if you're using Facebook and Instagram, or if it's just website remarketing. You know, you want those users to come back and re-engage with you, of course, and, you know, have another conversion whenever they're ready. Lookalike audiences based on remarketing should be another priority. That's mm-hmm. making a similar audience set based on the attributes of the people on your remarketing list, so people you know that have converted already. Oftentimes, for both Google and Facebook and LinkedIn as well, which newly added, you know, lookalike audiences, that's certainly something that you should be incorporating as the next step as well, because it is based on known converters. But of course, outside of that, within Facebook and Instagram specifically, there's so many different audience segments. But what's great with, you know, these ad formats is, you know, let's say you really want to try targeting two drastically different audiences. You can just make two different creative sets. And if the image fits both, all you have to do is change the ad copy that goes for each one. So you can, it's not necessarily as much work as it used to be in years past. You'd have to make, you know, all the different ad variations, the static ones. It actually is easier for advertisers to scale up to more audiences using these types of response of this ad unit.
Speaking of easier, how it used to be, and I think it's a little correlation as you've been explaining responsive, you know, search ads, display ads, what you can do on social. A-B testing popped right into my head because A-B testing has been around forever. We know that it's not going away. I think it's kind of changed and the terminology can change on what you're testing. But we used to do tons of A-B tests, quote unquote, where we were essentially testing two different ads. We weren't really testing a reaction to an audience, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of these changes to responsive ad units and letting the artificial intelligence on these platforms do their job, it seems like A-B testing is now moving to a position where we are really talking about you are testing something on your website to get an audience reaction. You don't have to A-B test your ad units anymore because that's what the responsive ad units are doing, right? Or is that, would you say that's incorrect? Or
I'd say that is correct. That's definitely what these new ad units are moving towards, optimizing on the fly for each ad impression and making it very easy to see, you know, while you don't need to do like an A-B test, you can check at any time after you launch these, you know, which one of the assets are doing best.
Yeah.
So let's say in Facebook and Instagram, you have five videos uploaded in Dynamic Creative, and two of these videos are doing really well, getting most of the impressions, the highest click-through rate. You then now know, okay, for these audience segments that I have, I can even take this to other channels and know, okay, we need more video content like this, or maybe we should do some email marketing to these types of users with these types of videos and content. So you are getting the benefits of all the analysis and learnings that you would get from a traditional A-B test, but as soon as you have enough data, you don't have to, you know, hope that it was one particular asset in this variation that you had statically created that was driving it, because that's the other problem with the more traditional way.
Yeah.
If you have a headline, a description, and an image or a video, it's like, okay, you know, this together did really well.
Yeah.
But what really drove that performance from that static variation? Was it this really strong call to action we had in the text?
Right.
Or was it the visual of the creative? You really couldn't tell that very easily without a lot of different tests.
Yeah, that's a good
point. So with the A-B testing, I'd say absolutely at the ad side, it's really moving towards this. This is the most effective way to test assets. But with A-B testing, it's become, not that it's never not been important, but you really should shift that type of focus, you know, when you're looking at, you know, conversion rate optimization on a website.
Take the, you know, guessing game out of your job, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a marketer, use these things to your advantage because, it wasn't too long ago where we were sitting in a room saying this ad performed better than ad A performed better than ad B. And we think it's because of this headline, when in all reality, it could have been the image, for example. So take that guessing game out of your job, because you're going to make better and more informed decisions for your company, which likely will equal that revenue goal or that engagement goal you're trying to get to. So we've been talking about, you know, creating this bucket of assets, letting these channels do their thing, and then eventually over time, it could be quick, could take a couple months, depending on the traffic, et cetera. But you're going to see which ads, or in some cases, which parts of the ads are performing better than others. Charlie, if I go 60 days, for example, and I started with a bank of assets, and after that 60 days, I see that I can now pretty much break them up into two groups. One group that's doing really well that I want to keep testing, and another group that's just not working out. Will that platform, whether it be Google or Facebook, will it put those ads, quote unquote, like a low spend or like a low flame, or turn them off completely? Should you turn them off completely? Should you keep them there? Like, where's that threshold once you realize these aren't working out? Should you just turn them off?
Sure. So you would be editing the ad at that point. So let's say you launched a responsive search ad and you have 15 headlines and 4 descriptions. And you know one of the descriptions, it's not getting any impressions, you know, Google's not seeing value in it, and you want to swap out 2 of the headlines.
Yeah.
So as an advertiser, you have a couple choices. You could just go in there, remove the description, add the new description in, and in some cases, in the headline, same thing. You know, that could work, and then you'll start seeing the new data populate for those, you know, new headlines and descriptions. Another approach you could take as well is pause that responsive search ad unit that had the original asset bank, and then just create a new one within that ad group or ad set, if it's Facebook we're talking about, with the changes that you have, because you'll have those learnings saved in the paused ad unit, and then you move towards the new ad unit, and then you can compare overalls with the changes that you've made.
Makes
so
sense.
Either one of those approaches will work. It just depends on the type of reporting you'll need to utilize after. And the second of those two options is likely what I would say the optimal way to proceed, just so you keep everything clean and you have a little switch over there.
Got it. Last thing I want to touch on is a touchy subject for a lot of brands out there, because they take a lot of pride in their brand guidelines, as they should, right? Absolutely. Yep. You've probably taken a lot of time to either create them or update them, and you should keep everything consistent. But I think it's very important to also let people know that you are going to compromise potentially some parts of your brand guidelines with the way that responsive ad units and artificial intelligence is set up, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're potentially not okay with having words or images or the size of your ad changed around a little bit to something that you wouldn't normally do if you were doing it yourself, you could be in for a rude awakening. But that shouldn't discourage you from doing responsive ads, right?
No, not at all. It's definitely a subject that's come up a lot, especially when these were first introduced and still all of them were in beta. Because they're responsive in nature, and Google is taking all of these assets and shaping them to be the best placement possible for, you know, that website, that app, platform, whatever it may be, you have to be flexible with giving them, you know, that opportunity to do just that. And they have the information to know, okay, just, you know, very clear text with a white background and the image and your company logo, that's all that user needs to click through and convert. That's what's going to look best on this website.
Right.
So in order to take advantage of all the things we just talked about, that's the only real compromise you'd have to make, but it really shouldn't be a concerning one because with responsive display ads and with Facebook, which are the only two that are really visual in nature, a search ad, you know, you have the URL, you have your branding and the headline. But with the display ads in Facebook and Instagram, you have your profile, if it's Facebook and Instagram, you know, on all ads. Mm-hmm. You have the name. So, you know, your brand's never going to be lost.
Right.
And it's, you know, and they're always well integrated within the newsfeed. So within Facebook, really, it should be a non-issue.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about, you know, responsive display ads in Google, where the placements aren't, you know, the same in the newsfeed or whatever it may be, you still have the ability to put your company name, your company logo, as separate fields when you make this ad unit. So they, you know, will always show within the ad. So you don't need to put your company logo in the image. You know, you can put it, but it may be a little bit redundant because you're going to have the company logo separately there as well. But it really shouldn't be something, you know, if there is a company that does have very strict brand guidelines that just cannot be broken, and the search ads or the responsive search ads or display ads in this case actually, you know, don't fit that. Yeah. And there's nothing you can do about it. You know, you are going to be losing out on, you know, the latest best performing display ad right. unit. And if that's what's more important than, you know, higher conversion rate, higher click-through rate.
Yeah.
So be it.
Right. You should probably have a conversation internally about what's more important.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you're going to end up wasting money if you're running ads. And again, the compromise we're talking about is very slim.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like your brand's going to be totally defaced and no one's going to recognize it. And I think another important thing to remember too is you as a marketer or someone who works for your brand, you are scrutinizing your brand guidelines at a different level because you know them so well. Mm-hmm. The user who's seeing your ad has no idea that maybe the color or the text or the image is off a little bit. Mm-hmm. All they care about is the optimal experience to hopefully take the action you want them to take. So just keep that in mind, that it's really you sitting in a room, you know, trying to boil the ocean. It may not be that big of a deal. So we would suggest to let that compromise live as is.
Yeah. And I would also bring up as well, and this is something I'm sure a lot of people experience on their own, is, you know, you see, we saw banners for so many years, the traditional banners, we still see them.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, a lot of people, unless it's something that really sticks out to them, you know, just skip right over the banner, regardless of what it is. And they just look at the content that they came for. One of the benefits of these responsive display ads is they integrate so well within the placement. So Google knows, you know, what's going to look organic, so to speak, in terms of the placement on the site. So it's not doing anything to, you know, jeopardize the brand or the brand integrity. It's doing only what it's going to do to help the ad get clicked on and get to the right users. So it really, like you said, it isn't a compromise that I really would be concerned about at all. It's really just to help you in
the
end.
It's a good deal to make.
Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely. Charlie, this has been great, great tips. A lot of information. You know, we started with responsive ads in general, why they're important. Yep. And then really thank you for breaking it down, search, display, and Facebook. If you are looking to test responsive ad units and you're not right now, we highly recommend that. Charlie, you know, you wouldn't say turn off everything you're doing and just switch all to responsive, right? I know you said earlier you would recommend leaving like your text ads on or something like that. So there's a balance there, right?
Yeah. For responsive search ads in Google search, I wouldn't say just ditch all of your old ad units yet in terms of expanded text ads. But for Facebook, Instagram, and for Google Display, you can go with just the responsive ads. That's really, you know, kind of a best practice now, as long as you have the assets available.
There you go. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Charlie, hopefully the second time here is a charm. And thanks for joining us and giving the listeners some tips on responsive ad units today.
Of course. Thank you, Chuck.